This is Sportscaster.com's Open Mic with Johnny Kane on 760 WJR, featuring sports commentary and stories brought to you by the most compelling rising stars in sports broadcasting. Here's your host, Johnny Kane.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to the show. It is our first show of 2026. I'm Johnny Kane from Sportscaster.com, and we have a good one laid out for you today. Over the next hour, we're going to hear stories from our Sportscaster contributors about a range of topics that are of interest to you if you follow sports on any level. Now, if you're new to the show, this is Open Mic, and we come on every Wednesday night at 8 o'clock here on WJR. And the voices you'll hear are aspiring sportscasters with commentary on topics that range from high school sports up through the professional ranks. Tonight, we're going to discuss the crossover element used by a lot of pro athletes who train in other disciplines in order to prevent injury and also while sharpening the mental component of their games, kind of the cognitive benefits of cross-training. We're also going to hear from a young man who's on the autism spectrum, who works with statistics here in Detroit, works for the FanDuel Sports Network on Detroit Tigers, Detroit Pistons broadcasts, and a lot of the high school coverage as well. We're also going to preview the upcoming Winter Olympic Games and the storylines of interest as the world's best athletes descend on Italy in a little less than a month from now. And we'll discuss the newest high school sport, boys volleyball, which will be added by the Michigan High School Athletic Association coming up in the spring. So a lot to get to tonight, and we're going to start with this. So if you've ever been to a Detroit Tigers game, and if you get there early enough, you've likely seen some of the players out on the field maybe throwing the football around. It happens quite frequently. They're running routes in the expanse outfield of Comerica Park. They do it on the road as well. If you follow the NBA, you may have seen a recent clip that's making its rounds here currently. Philadelphia 76ers all-star guard Tyrese Maxey using tennis balls to warm up before games. He does it with both his right and left hands, working on hand-eye coordination, his ambidextrous training, which helps him as a ball handler. Or maybe you've seen some footage of some of the Red Wings players juggling a soccer ball in the hallways before games. It's not just the love of other sports that brings the guys to do this. There are reasons behind it. As one of our newest sportscaster contributors, Mary Claire Zacharias, explains, the best athletes don't just train their bodies, they train the mental component.
I'm Mary Claire Zacharias, and today we are diving into something you have probably seen, but maybe never really cared enough to ask about. Why do pro athletes warm up and train with other sports? Why is Myles Garrett in the NFL playing pickup basketball with an NBA star? Why is a star shortstop taking ballet? Well, let's break it down. We are living in an era where young athletes feel pressure to play at the highest level at a very young age. They play year-round, traveling long distances with their club team, on the off-season grind, doing three-a-days, leading to young athletes getting burned out. But here is the twist. The world's top pro athletes often do the opposite. They cross-train and move their bodies in new ways. Because the truth is, your body isn't built to repeat the same motions 12 months a year. Take Patrick Mahomes. Before he was throwing football sidearms off his back foot, he was a high-level baseball player receiving many Division I offers. Or look at LeBron James, the all-time leading scorer in NBA history with over 42,000 points. Says his ability to read the floor and agility work comes from playing football growing up, as he was compared to top wide receivers like Randy Moss. So what do the pros know that we don't? Let's start with the warm-up. A warm-up isn't just about getting loose. It's about activating neural pathways, telling yourself to remember how to move like an athlete. And sometimes the best way to do that isn't through your sport at all. One example is soccer juggling. You see basketball players do it all the time. Why would they be doing this, you might ask? Because juggling a soccer ball requires touch, rhythm, and coordination skills that translate to court vision and hand-eye coordination when you step foot on the hardwood. Another example is playing tennis for baseball and hockey players. The rapid lateral footwork forces your body to use muscles you might not hit in your primary sports warm-up. The thing is, when pros train in other sports, it's not random. They are looking for specific advantages. Here are a few big ones. Number one, injury prevention, the one my dad always talks about. Sports that repeat the same movement like pitching, sprinting, skating build strength, but also imbalances. Cross-training hits muscles that get ignored. That's why some NFL linemen take ballet. not for the cute little tutu, but for the balance, flexibility, and joint control that keeps 320-pound athletes from blowing out their knees so easily. Number two, cognitive benefits is also another, as different sports challenges the brain in multiple different ways. Basketball sharpens spatial awareness and quick decision-making. Martial arts teaches discipline, body control, and foot placement. And soccer builds anticipation and recognition of patterns. The best athletes don't just train their bodies, they train their mental game. Finally, creativity and problem solving. When you watch any highlight reel, the no-look pass, the off-platform throw, the behind-the-back feed, you will see movement patterns recognizable from other sports. Mahomes throws like a shortstop. Steph Curry warms up like a soccer striker. Creativity in sports comes from having more tools in the toolbox. There is a huge mental component to this as well. Pro athletes train almost year-round as the grind is real, as people like to say. Doing another sport, even for fun, gives their minds a break while still keeping them competitive. Do you ever watch pro athletes play pickup games in the offseason? Well, if you haven't, you are missing out because they are laughing, talking smack to each other. Coaches say it all the time. Become an athlete before you become a specialist, and the pros prove it. If your goal is college sports, if your goal is varsity next year, or even if you're just trying to stay healthy during the season, then training like a multi-sport athlete isn't optional. It's a championship mindset. Play pickup basketball, try Pilates, run track, swim in the offseason. The more versatile your movement patterns become, the ceiling then becomes the roof. So the next time you see Rudy Gobert juggling a soccer ball or Bobby Witt Jr. playing cricket, remember, they are not messing around. They are sharpening their skills to become a greater athlete. It's a competitive edge that leads you to be great at everything you do on and off the court.
That was Mary Claire Zacharias, a high school student from St. James Academy from the Kansas City metro area. It's actually one of the high schools I used to cover before moving to Detroit several years ago now. But one of the great bits that Mary Claire brought up is become an athlete before you become a specialist. And as we know, nearly every elite athlete at one point played multiple sports growing up. And now perhaps you have a little better understanding of the benefits that come with that even now. All right, I want to welcome in our next guest, Donald Schasser from FanDuel Sports Network Detroit. Good friend of mine. Donald, welcome to the show.
It's good to be here, Johnny.
How long have we worked together?
That would be going on like 5 years now. It's been a pretty good 5 years.
Yeah, I think so. Can you tell our listeners, what roles do you perform at FanDuel?
I'm a production assistant, a statistician, and fan bar operator, which is a scorebug.
All right, so the scorebug's what rolls at the bottom of the screen whenever you're watching games?
Yes, it is, with all the stats on the side and whatnot. It's all pretty cool.
And where did you go to school?
I went to Specs Howard School of Media Arts for a year and got a 3.6 GPA.
Attaboy. So I know you had aspirations of working in sports when you were at Specs Howard. Tell me how you got your break. Like, how did you break into the industry?
Well, 6 months after I graduated Specs Howard, Matt Brindley, who connected me and Joe Gersma, and he watched a lot of my live videos where I would do stats on all the NFL games. My sister gave me a call and pretty much was like, there's a guy named Joe Gersma wants to help you get into the industry. I ended up talking to him that day, and he said he didn't have anything at the time, but keep in contact with him. So I did that pretty much like every week to 2 weeks, and he got me an interview with Jeff Beil, which was a great interview. It lasted like an hour, and I ended up interviewing the same day with Brady Klima, and they said, we'll let you know. And 2 days later, I was going into Walmart to get a fishing license, and I get a call from Brady Klima and asking me if I wanted the job. And it was a kind of a full circle moment because it was a lot of obstacles I've overcome. And when I got offered that job, I obviously accepted it, but I had tears coming down, and so did my parents when we found out that I got the job.
Well, we're grateful you did. Just to connect the dots here, Brady Klima is a coordinating producer at what is now FanDuel Sports Network, formerly Bally Sports Detroit, formerly Fox Sports Detroit. Jeff Bile was the executive producer, and Joe Gersma, a sales manager. You mentioned you've had to overcome some things throughout your life. You have autism, and I'm curious how, you know, the perceptions of someone who is autistic and able to work in a professional sports environment. Did you think it would be possible to be able to do the things that you've been doing today?
Yes, I thought it was possible just because of my love for sports. I mean, I love sports since I was like, since I can remember, my dad playing catch with me in the yard and taking me to my first Tigers game. And it was my dream ever since then to somehow be involved in sports. I knew I could do it. But the perception, as you say, there was a lot of doubts by a lot of different people. But the thing that kept me through it was my family that never gave up. And it was pretty good to have a great support system because they never shied away. They always thought I could do it. And here we are, 5 years into the job, got my break, and we're here. And anything's possible, Johnny.
Yeah, No, I appreciate you saying that, man. And obviously, we all have things in our life that, you know, it's part of our story. And so I do feel there's probably misperceptions about, you know, what even autism is or what would be possible for somebody with autism to work in a professional sports environment. Do you think that there's a misunderstanding as far as what the capabilities are? Like, you know, somebody said, hey, we have a job applicant here. Oh, by the way, you know, he has autism, that deters some people from giving that opportunity, right, to somebody like you?
Yes, I feel there is to an extent, but there's also different types of autism. I mean, there's also nonverbal people that can't talk, or they have to talk mainly through a tablet. And there's some people that can talk and function like me, because I have a mild case of it. But I think there's a misconception there, because there is a lot of things autism does for you that a normal person probably can't do. It's like you think a lot differently.
Sure. But to your point there, I know your devotion to what you do and how much you put into your daily work with FanDuel. What have been some of the sports you've been able to cover? Like, what have been some of the shows you've been able to work on?
I've worked on a lot of pregame shows for the Tigers, the Red Wings, and the Pistons. I believe those were really good experiences because you're editing the content that goes on the show, which shows in a lot of those pregame packs that you see, because I know you're a pregame host for the Pistons, so you see all those packs that we do. It's pretty easy, but the main thing that I like to do is statistician stuff has always been the thing that I've liked to do with the company, because I've really been into numbers, and somebody with the autistic brain that I have, we're actually really good with numbers. It's a good experience because you're doing the job that you would have never thought that was possible, because you're actually doing the sports that you've always loved. Like, baseball was my number one sport for a while, and always watching the Tigers growing up. It's cool to be able to do stats for the Tigers, and it's pretty cool.
Yeah, no, it's really cool. And, you know, like, as you know, obviously everybody works in the truck, like the production truck and behind the scenes, you know. People at home, they just see the, what we call talent. We refer to the on-air personalities as talent. You know, a lot of times if I'm asking for a stat or a number, it's like, what does Donald have? So you're giving the information that then we can project out to the audience. Is it hard? I would think like stats, you know, for some of us that aren't numbers inclined, I'll put myself in that category. What is it about numbers and stuff that you like? Like, is it hard coming up with, you know, different stats, or is it just comes naturally for you?
It comes naturally for me. I just notice the trends that are going on during the game. Like, say that the Pistons are on an 8-0 run, or we're talking about baseball. Kerry Carpenter's been really on fire lately. Like, maybe 10 out of his last 20, 500 average there. Or specifically for a Tigers game, giving them the pitches at the end of each inning. I know it's also a lot for you guys to keep involved in the game because you're obviously talking. And if my job is to make your guys' job a lot easier, and if I can do that in any way.
Yeah, well, you do make our jobs easier. I can promise you that. We're talking with Donald Shastner, a production assistant at FanDuel Sports Network. What advice would you have to other people that might have similar aspirations of working in sports, you know, that want to do what you've been able to do?
Yeah, it's not that hard as a lot of people say, because you just got to catch your break. especially for somebody like me, because a lot of people growing up having autism, it would be difficult for other people to understand that you could actually make it happen. It's just a different way that people think. Once you're honed in on a task, you can always accomplish it. And you just have to take the proper steps to get there. It's all on you.
I love it, man. That's great advice. You're a big part of what we do at FanDuel Sports Network. Specs Howard graduate, Donald Schasser, production assistant at FanDuel. And you hit it right on, man, to have the sports system around you. But again, it's having the dream, the obsession of wanting to pursue your, you know, your dreams in life. And no matter what you have, you always know that, you know, anything's possible. So I appreciate you being on the show, and I look forward to our next game working together.
Thank you so much for inviting me on the show.
Our next guest is a young man by the name of J.C. Fox. He attends Mississippi College, which is in Clinton, Mississippi, just outside of Jackson. Went to high school at Oakdale Academy. J.C. Fox, welcome back to the show.
Thank you for having me. Excited to talk about the Winter Olympics coming up in about a month.
Yeah, we're about a month away, just inside a month, to be sure. And I'm a big Winter Olympics guy. And I don't know if nationally, maybe the Summer Olympics probably gets a little more play. But how excited are you for the Winter Olympics coming around?
Very excited, especially with a lot of different stuff going on. You know, the scenery in Italy is beautiful up there in the mountains. And then the return of NHL players for the first time in 12 years.
Yeah, that's the big draw. And obviously, you know, we're in, you know, a hockey hotbed here in Detroit. And obviously, we're going to have some familiar faces and names that will be competing for not just Team USA, but throughout some of the different nations that are involved. So how big do you think that is for just the Winter Olympics and the attention by having NHL caliber players back involved in the Olympics?
Oh, I think it's huge because it draws in a whole nother group of fans, because there may be some fans who are isolated, if you will, because they don't have any local ski jumpers or curlers or speed skaters. But, you know, when you have a player like Quinn and Jack Hughes, who are on the Olympic team, who, although they have Metro Detroit ties, they played for the U.S. development team in Plymouth and all that, they're from Florida. You have three players, I believe, on the men's team who are from Arizona. So you're bringing in different parts of the country through these NHL players and different fan bases of different NHL teams, and bringing a whole nother audience to the Olympic Games who may not have watched if the NHL players weren't participating.
Sure. And what about any Red Wings ties?
We have three Red Wings who are competing in this year's games. There's Mo Sider, who will be competing for his home nation of Germany. Lucas Raymond, who will be competing for Sweden. And then the Red Wings captain, Dylan Larkin, who will be obviously on Team USA.
Yeah, that's exciting, man. Obviously, you know, putting the C on the sweater is one thing, and now getting a chance to represent, you know, your home country, it's going to be big time. Does Team USA have a legitimate chance? Like, who, in your opinion, or from what you're reading, like, who is the favorite in men's ice hockey?
I think it comes down to the same two, really. It comes down to every year, the U.S. and Canada. And it could really go either way. I think the Four Nations face-off we had last year was just a taste of what the Olympics will be this year. But there's a whole lot of talent on this U.S. team at every level, forward, defenseman, goalie. They seem to be a physical team. They have a good bit of size and physicality. So it will be interesting to see how that plays, especially on a smaller rink that they have over there for these Olympic Games.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up about the Four Nations, because for any fan of the sport, watching that, the drama that ensued, and you know, again, it's different when you have like a favorite team, but when it's your country, it's like when you have a country support, it takes on a whole different meaning. That's why, you know, obviously why we love the Olympics so much. And the Four Nations, like you said, almost like wet the palate a little bit of like what we could expect if all teams take care of their business. And, you know, you could see United States and Canada squaring off yet again. I just think it's fabulous. How different is, do you know, like the difference in the ice? Is it a marked difference? Like will strategy shift at all as far as the hockey that we're used to seeing here stateside than what we'll see in international play?
I think it should be very similar hockey. Anyone who follows hockey super closely will know that there were some reports and some questions about whether the NHL players were going to play with the arena taking a bit longer than it should have. And I believe that caused the ice to be a few feet shorter. And I think that did play into a little bit of the roster build of the team, especially the U.S., going for more physical players rather than players who use speed and space because you're in a more confined environment. So I think that changed the roster build a couple different ways, maybe kept a couple guys off the roster who were making really good cases why they should be on. But I think it's just going to be good hockey, you know, good classic hockey, hopefully some more physicality than we see in the regular season. So more like NHL playoff hockey, but I think it's going to be exciting and really good for the sport.
Yeah, sign me up. NHL playoff caliber hockey being played on the international stage. All right. And obviously hockey, not the only sport that we'll be talking about. Before we get to your piece, what can you tell us about where the Olympics are being held? There's two different cities, technically, in Italy?
Well, there are two different cities on the name. It's the Milano Cortina Olympic Games, but there are actually eight different host sites, which is totally different than the way we've seen Olympics run before. There's an average of 78 miles between each site, so it's very spread out. Maybe a little eye into what Olympics will look like in the future rather than building new infrastructure using existing infrastructure and spreading it out. But there's Milano, which has the stadium games, more city landscape, and then there are the mountain regions, beautiful in Italy, where we'll have the skiing and the snowboarding and the bobsled and those types of things. So I think it'll be give fans a good range of Italian landscape and bring out the best that Italy has to offer by way of the facilities they have for these winter games.
Yeah, incredible. And to your point, Winter Olympics will be upon us before long, less than 1 month away. Here is JC Fox from Mississippi College with a 2026 Winter Olympic preview.
The Milano Cortina 2026 Winter Olympic Games, which begin on February 6th, mark the third time the nation of Italy is hosting the Winter Olympics. However, these Olympic Games look very different than the previous two. This time, the locations are very spread out with eight host sites, averaging a distance of 78 miles between each location. There are six sites which have mountain landscapes, such as Athens, which will host the biathlon and cross-country skiing, Bormio, which will host alpine skiing and ski mountaineering, a new sport in the 2026 Games, Cortina, which will host alpine skiing, bobsleigh, curling, luge, and the skeleton, Livigno, which will have freestyle skiing and snowboard, as well as Predazzo and Tessera, which will each have different skiing events. There are also two city landscapes which will host events in this year's Games. Milano, which will have the arena sports such as figure skating, ice hockey, and speed skating. And then there's also Verona, which will host ceremonial events such as the closing ceremony in the Arena de Verona, a 2,000-year-old Roman amphitheater, tying back to ancient Italian culture. Besides these places that are hosting different events, let's discuss a sport I am very excited about for this year's Olympic Games, ice hockey. Both the U.S. men's and women's ice hockey teams look very impressive and should make deep runs towards bringing home medals this year. The USA women's ice hockey team won the silver medal in 2022 and has medaled every single year that women's hockey has been an Olympic event. They have a very impressive rivalry with Canada, with the two teams meeting in six of the seven women's hockey gold medal games. And I'm excited to see the continuation of this rivalry into this year's games, especially with two native Michiganders playing for Team USA, Kristen Sims from Plymouth and Megan Keller from Farmington. There are also, on the men's side, NHL players returning to the Olympic Games for the first time since the 2014 Sochi Olympics. There are three Red Wings who will be playing in this year's games. Moritz Seider, the defenseman playing for his home nation of Germany, Lucas Raymond, a forward playing for Sweden. And then the captain of the Red Wings, Dylan Larkin from Waterford, playing, of course, for the United States. And joining Larkin on Team USA, there are many other athletes who have strong Michigan connections. There's Connor Hallebuck, the Winnipeg Jets goalie, who's from Commerce. Zach Werenski of the Columbus Blue Jackets, he's from Grosse Pointe. Kyle Connor from the Winnipeg Jets, he's from Shelby Township. And then Jack and Quinn Hughes, who played in the U.S. development program in Plymouth, who both have strong Michigan connections. With the Olympics only a month away, I am very excited for these Winter Games and to see all the great athletes competing in this amazing worldwide event. Whether you're watching for the beautiful landscapes of the different host sites, the superstar athletes, or the athletes with local Michigan connections, the 2026 Winter Olympics provides something for all types of fans.
All right, good stuff from JC Fox. He's a freshman at Mississippi College with his Detroit ties at Oakdale Academy. And again, just interesting about some of the local athletes that will be competing on the international stage and obviously on the world stage with the Olympic Games coming up in the early part of February in Italy. A lot to look forward to on that. We have a first timer here on Open Mic. This young man's name is Raleigh Lepic from Howell High School. Raleigh, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's good to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, no, it's good to have you on. And first off, let's get to know you a little bit. What grade are you in and what are you studying?
I'm a senior right now at Howell High School, and I'm looking to go to Michigan State next year for broadcasting.
It's a good decision. And you've got an older brother who goes to Michigan State already?
Yes, I do. He's right there studying law, but he's shown me a lot about state and really made me like want to go there. So I'm very thankful for that.
Yeah, it's a great school, obviously a great broadcast program. So you'll be off and running here before long, but obviously work to do at the high school level before you get on into college.
Yes.
And a great opportunity here to be doing some work, be on the show, talk about some of the interesting stories that are happening across the state. And what I find interesting is that, you know, the MHSAA is adding programs. And, you know, over the last couple of years or last several years, you know, it seems like there's always cutbacks of sports that are being taken away. But now they've got a new sport that is into the fold for the spring semester. What can you tell us?
Yeah, so MHSAA is adding in boys volleyball. Now is the new sport. And it was something that a lot of people were trying to like get to become like a new thing, but like officially recognized. There's a lot of clubs that they'd have going just after like girls games and stuff like that. But I think it's really awesome. Now it's becoming a mainstream sport coming in the next year. And I think it's going to grow big audiences and become a big sport amongst high school.
Sure. I remember when I was in high school, I went to high school back in Northwest Ohio, and there was a young man from our school that actually transferred out to go to another program where they had boys volleyball. You know, it wasn't something that was available when I was in high school. And, you know, I'm a couple years older than you, just a couple, but I know it, you know, it's a popular sport and obviously a lot of gifted athletes. Do you have any friends that play boys volleyball? Do you have any connection to it?
I had a few kids who I played basketball with. They played in like separate leagues. So like one of them, the center of my bass team's probably like 6'7" or something. He would play in a league back at like Legacy, which is basically just a like community center. And those two would like just play a ton. And in gym class, we'd see him. We like, you should really play somewhere and stuff. You could go to college for this. So those two guys were just really good.
Yeah. And obviously it helps to have a little bit of length. I've covered, you know, volleyball on the high school level. And then through college, actually, one of my previous stops before I got to Detroit, I remember I covered Division II women's volleyball and just some tremendous athletes and some crossover sports, too. Do you see aside from like the obvious parallels with, you know, like obviously great height, you know, you mentioned like your buddy's the center, you know, which helps for guys to play at the front of the net. Do you see like how the sport of boys volleyball kind of correlates to some other sports? There might be some advantages.
I could definitely see it just with the reaction times and stuff that'll come from like maybe on like the basketball court, stuff like that, just that natural athleticism, the coordination, making quick plays like that. I think it could definitely correlate. And I think it could honestly make players better at separate sports. How like coaches always talk about how they want athletes playing two sports. I think boys volleyball could be the same thing. It could just help people become more athletic, better with hand-eye coordination.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. And just the sport itself, I know crowds, especially at high school, I mean, whether it's soccer, basketball, football, the high school crowds, the fan bases, they want to get into it. You know, it's like you almost just need to give them a reason to come out and unwind, let your hair down. It just seems like at the high school level, it's like a fevered pitch about people that want to come out and support. How would you describe it? What's the student body like attending sporting events?
Oh, I think it's amazing. Like just seeing them all within the past few years with how football teams just become a lot better now. I think it's brought everyone together for like basketball, girls, basketball, baseball, like every sport now. You're starting to see more and more people. And then I think my personal favorite's when you play like a close hometown rival team and kind of see everyone come together from both communities and just make it a great atmosphere. And I think it'll do the same for boys volleyball.
Yeah, I sure hope so. And I'm excited to see where it goes from here. I miss my time in high school, you know, and for a lot of competitors, a lot of athletes, you know, that's it. Like high school athletics, that's going to be it as far as your sanctioned competition, I would say. You know, you can always play club stuff when you get into college and further it that way. But, you know, I've always just felt there's a great value placed on high school athletes. And the more sports that they can be involved in, the better. And with boys volleyball coming to the MHSA, I just think it's going to be a great deal. So without further ado, let's listen to Raleigh Lepick from Howell High School on the MHSAA and its edition of boys volleyball coming up in the spring semester.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Sportscaster's Open Mic Radio. I'm Raleigh Lepick, and today we're talking about something big. For the first time in nearly 20 years, the MHSAA is officially adding a new sport to its lineup, and that sport, boys volleyball. That's right. Starting in the 2025-2026 school year, boys volleyball will officially become a sanctioned sport under the Michigan High School Athletic Association. It joins girls field hockey, which was just added this fall, as one of the newest MHSAA recognized sports since 2004. Let's take a quick look at the history of boys volleyball in Michigan. Even though girls volleyball has been a part of high school athletics for decades, boys volleyball has had a tougher road. The sport started to grow quietly in the 1970s and 1980s, mostly in Southeast Michigan, where local clubs and high schools organized unofficial leagues. But because it wasn't recognized by the MHSAA, boys teams had to rely on volunteer coaches and pay-to-play models and limited access to gym space, often playing after the girls' teams were done for the night. Fast forward to today, and that passion never went away. According to the Michigan Boys Volleyball Coaches Association, there are now more than 70 high schools across the state that offer boys volleyball at the club level. And that number keeps growing every season. The popularity has especially taken off in Metro Detroit, Grand Rapids, and Ann Arbor. So, what does becoming an MHSAA sport actually mean? It means schools will now be able to compete for official state titles. It means athletes will have structured seasons, certified officials, and access to school funding. And maybe most importantly, it gives the sport credibility, the same recognition as basketball, football, or track. This move could also boost recruiting and scholarships in colleges in Michigan and across the Midwest, like Ball State, Lewis, and Purdue Fort Wayne. They have strong men's volleyball programs. High school players here will finally have a career path to play at the next level. Now, there's also Title IX angle to this. Title IX requires gender equality in school sports, meaning that opportunities for boys and girls must be balanced. In addition to boys volleyball, actually helps with that. For years, schools have added more girls sports like wrestling and field hockey to meet equality requirements. But adding boys volleyball doesn't tip the scales unfairly. It helps balance participation numbers in schools that already offer a large number of girls teams. It's a part of an overall trend toward expanding access for both genders, not limiting it. In short, this is a win-win. It opens new doors for male athletes while maintaining fairness across the board. So here's the bottom line. Boys volleyball is finally stepping into the spotlight in Michigan after decades of being played in the shadows. It's getting the recognition it deserves, and for the players, this moment is long overdue. What do you think? Will boys volleyball take off in Michigan the way girls volleyball did decades ago? And could it be the next big high school sport to fill gyms every spring? I'm Raleigh Lepick, and this has been Open Mic Radio, where student voices keep the conversation alive in Michigan high school sports.
All right, you were listening to Raleigh Lepick from Howell High School, and really good stuff about boys volleyball coming to the MHSAA. Appreciate his time on that. I want to thank all our guests on the show today. J.C. Fox from Mississippi College, as we preview the upcoming Winter Olympic Games in Italy. A lot to look forward to on that. Also want to thank my friend, coworker, Donald Schasser, for his involvement working with numbers and stats on a lot of our broadcasts in the NBA and Major League Baseball through the FanDuel Sports Network, and also Mary Claire Zacharias about how athletes, you know, going back into the crossover sports of how a lot of elite athletes, professional level athletes, how they train in other disciplines in order to work on hand-eye coordination and obviously train in the mental component of sports. That is going to do it this week on Open Mic. As always, we appreciate you listening. And as always, want to remind you that we come on every Wednesday night at 8 o'clock here on WJR. We look forward to seeing you back here next week, same time. I'm Johnny Kane with Sportscaster.com. Until next time, Godspeed.